Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of today's survival show. Don't stop thinking about tomorrow. Yesterday is gone. Hopefully you enjoyed that little intro song by Fleetwood Mac. We help you harness the power of choice to live the life that you want and to strengthen your resolve. And here at today's survival show, we're all about making survival simple, not extreme. So if you are a first-time listener, I would like to welcome you. We are the voice of reason in a chaotic world, and thank you for tuning in. You're going to find that we're a little bit different than some of the other survival shows out there. We make it simple. We're not extreme. One of the things that really hacks me off is that many survivalists are given a bad label, and some of them earn that bad label because some of them are very extreme. A lot of conspiracy theorists out there, a lot of whacked out ideas. That's not what you're going to find here at today's survival show. You're going to find reasonable, common sense, practical survival, really. And, you know, this is practical survivalism, things that we need to do every day, no matter whether things are tough for us or even if things are going pretty well. It's things that we need to do every day to live a more secure life. That's what it's all about. So if you're a first-time listener, thank you for joining. This is episode number 18, and today is Thursday, the 17th of September, 2009. And I've got the pleasure of recording this from my home office. No traveling today, so I'm at my home office in Frisco, Texas, and it's always good to be at home getting things done like I need to be and getting a chance to take a little bit of time here to bring you episode 18. So again, thanks for tuning in. The primary topic matter of today's show is self-defense without a gun. And the reason I decided to do this show, we have some listeners on that are also on the forum. Some of them live in countries where gun ownership is not allowed. And we also have some listeners from some states in the United States where gun ownership is maybe allowed, but it's very difficult to get permits to carry your concealed carry weapon. There are still two states that don't allow it at all. And there's also some people that just prefer not, for whatever reason, to carry a firearm. So we're going to talk about how to defend yourself. There's many different ways and many different tools and many different techniques that you can use to defend yourself that don't require a firearm. So that's going to be the main topic. Before we get into that, the last show that I did, I was cracking some jokes. You might be a survivalist if. And I kind of used a little bit of the Jeff Foxworthy model, but I came up with some stuff that some people really enjoyed. I got some good comments on it. As a matter of fact, my list of jokes have been kind of spread around the internet, and that's a good thing to see. So some people emailed me a few more. So let me just take a minute to give you a few more bits of humor here that you can start off with, and then we'll get into the main topic. You might be a survivalist if you have three ways to start a fire in your front pockets and a can opener on your keychain. You also might be a survivalist if you have a bumper sticker in the shape of an M16 on your car. And finally, you might be a survivalist if you like cats, especially if they're cooked right. Anyway, just a few more that were emailed to me, and hopefully you got a little chuckle out of that. Anyway, before we get into the main topic, I'd like to talk about what my mentor taught me quite a few years ago. My mentor, Tom Hopkins, he taught that there were four stages of development that people go through whenever they're learning something. And if this is new to you, if self-defense is new to you, let me set this up by explaining the four levels of development that everybody goes through when they are learning something. This pertains to self-sufficiency, survival, and living a more independent life, because you are going to go through different stages. The first one that's going to happen is you're going to be called what's called unconscious incompetent. All right, let me repeat that. Unconscious incompetent. This means you don't even know that you don't even know what you're doing. And you know, we have a lot of people in this country that are in that situation. They don't even know that there's a problem, and they don't even know. They're so oblivious. They're in la-la land. They don't even know that they don't know. And there's a nickname for people like that, sheeple. All right, and if you're in this level, you're struggling in life, and you don't even know why you're struggling in life, And you may not even know that there's a problem. You're just oblivious. You're impervious to whatever. And, you know, unfortunately, there's so many people like that. So I'm going to put a call out to all of my listeners. If you know some unconscious, incompetent people, try to send them a friendly email to this show or to our forum or whatever and say, hey, just check this out and just, you know, let me know what you think of it. You owe it to these people to at least do something to maybe try to wake them up a little bit. I hope that when you're listening to this, you're not the unconscious incompetent. In fact, I'm fairly sure that you're not. You're probably at level two. Level two is what we call conscious incompetent. I'll repeat that. Conscious incompetent. Now, I'm not calling you an incompetent person. Please don't get offended. Here's my definition of that. You know that there's something wrong. Okay? You know that there's a lot that you don't know about secure living and survival and setting yourself up to be independent. And you begin to sense that there's something wrong and you need to make a change. And you might have some questions about your life that you're asking yourself. And at this level, you know that there's a lot more you need to learn, but you're not quite sure where to find it. And so this is where people start to wake up a little bit. This is where the awakening occurs at level two, which is called the conscious incompetent. And so then they begin to start checking out different avenues of learning. This podcast, other podcasts, my forum, other forums, things like that. Now, after level two, then you move into level three. After you start to check out different sources of information, you become what's called conscious competent. Conscious competent. At this level, you know what you need to do to survive. Okay? You've learned enough that now, and you say, okay, I know what I need to do to be a survival person. I know what I need to do to handle whatever problem, whatever disaster might come my way, no matter whether it's a small disaster, a large disaster, a common one, an uncommon one. You know, you're now consciously competent. You know that you know some pretty good stuff. Okay? But it's not second nature yet. It's not second nature yet. And if you haven't internalized what you've learned, and go back and listen to my episode number 7 where I talked about the 5 steps in the learning process. You have to internalize everything that you know, and by doing it, by actually putting it into practice in our life is when we start to internalize it. But when you're at the conscious competent level, this is the level where you're going to be very, very successful in preparing yourself and in preparing yourself for whatever might come your way. And you are successful, but you got to work real hard at it. You have to work very hard at achieving your goals. You know, for example, you might know the numbers that you need to achieve in your finances. You know, you already know where you need to be, and you're on your way there, but man, it's tough. And you know the preparations you have to make. Okay, you've already set a plan. You're conscious competent, so you set a plan for what preps you need to do, and you're on your way there. But it's tough work. You even know the subjects that you need to learn more about. You've identified some of your areas of weakness, and you're pursuing more knowledge in those areas. But figuring those out requires a lot of time and effort. That's the conscious competent. Now, that's pretty good. You're at level three. You're conscious competent. That's excellent. Here's the ultimate. The ultimate's level four. And that is what's called the unconscious competent. When you're at the unconscious competent level, that means that you don't even have to think about what you're doing because everything is automatic. Everything is reflexive. If you are in a self-defense situation where you have to defend yourself against an attacker, you don't have to think. You know exactly what to do. This is the highest level of competency. And everything you do becomes a reflex response. You know that if a certain weather disaster happens, boom, you have a response. You have an action. If you're attacked, boom, you have a reaction to it. If you do have to use your firearm, I know this is a podcast about not using firearms, and we're going to get into that. But if you do, bang, you got the muscle memory because you've been training. And now it's unconscious competence. You don't even think about it. If you know some martial arts and some self-defense techniques and someone grabs you by the throat, boom, you have a reaction to that. You know exactly what to do because you've practiced it thousands and thousands and thousands of times. Excuse me. Even if you're a business owner, and you're unconscious competent, you don't even have to think about what to do if a crisis hits your business. You've already got a plan that you have gone over in your mind many times, and you've thought about it. You know exactly how you're going to react. You know, athletes are a good example. You know, athletes like Michael Jordan when he was in his prime, Tiger Woods, Jeff Gordon, Brett Favre, Peyton Manning. These guys are they're unconscious competent. They don't even have to think about what they're doing. You know, when Peyton Manning sees a blitz and he's seen that blitz 100 times, he knows what play should be run. Now, does he always complete the pass? No, it doesn't mean that you're perfect. But when he sees a certain situation on the field, he knows exactly what to do because he's practiced it a million times. You know, when Tiger Woods, when his ball is 100 yards away and it's in the rough and it's at a certain angle to the hole and the wind is blowing in a certain direction, bang, he knows exactly what to do. Execution, then, has to be perfect in order for the positive result, but he's got a plan. They're at the top of their game. They seem to operate purely on instinct. And I emphasize that because that's what being unconscious competent means. You're operating on instinct. This is the goal that you should set for yourself, is to be unconscious competent, where you don't even have to think. All you do is you just simply react, and 99 times out of 100, it's going to be the proper reaction to the situation that you're in. So a quick review, and then we're going to move on, because I've got some good non-firearm self-defense techniques to share with you. But people start off unconscious and competent. They don't know they don't know. Then they become conscious and competent. Now they know that there's some things that they have to learn. Then they become conscious competent, where they're good, but it's still a lot of hard work, and it's not reflexive yet. And then the fourth level is they're unconscious competent. They don't even have to think. They just automatically know what to do. So hopefully you got a little something out of that, and you might find that it applies quite a bit to learning how to become more self-sufficient and live a more secure life. Okay, I want to move into the next segment of the show. In the past, I've done numbskulls and notables, and I'm going to do that again today. A numbskull, somebody that's just really stupid, really idiot, or just quite the jerk. And I've got a numbskull today. I don't have a notable person. There hasn't been a lot that has really stood out to me that people have been doing notable. If you know somebody that has done a notable thing that maybe I've left off of this show, feel free to email it to me and I'll include it in the next one. But the numbskull of the day, the real idiot, the real jerk. This actually took place on Tuesday. Former President Jimmy Carter. Former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, on Tuesday, he was making a comment about Representative Joe Wilson's outburst. And if you didn't see President Obama's speech on health care, during the speech, one of the members of the House of Representatives shouted out, "You lie." He shouted that out to the president. Now, I made some comments on the forum that I thought that was pretty unprofessional for him to do, and I still stand by that. I think that was an unprofessional thing for Representative Joe Wilson. I can't say that I disagree with Joe Wilson on that, because I think that that President Obama was less than truthful about that remark that he made about illegal aliens getting health coverage. But I think that I still stand by the fact that I think Representative Wilson picked the wrong time and the wrong place to do something like that. I just think it's very disrespectful. But anyway, he's not the numbskull. The numbskull is what Jimmy Carter, his comments about that incident. I'm going to quote former President Carter. He said, "I think it's based on racism." He said, "There is an inherent feeling among many in this country that an African American should not be president." End quote. That's what former President Carter said. All right, here's why I give him the numbskull award. That is hogwash. That's crap. That is total crap, Mr. Carter. And you need to shut your mouth on that, because it is not based on racism. First of all, there was nothing, absolutely nothing, in Representative Wilson's comments that had anything to do with racism. And although President Carter might be correct about an extremely small percentage of the U.S. population that has that kind of anti-African-American sentiment, that is not what the big uproar regarding health care is all about. The big uproar, the reason why people are upset, is because they're afraid of what their government is going to do to them. That's what they're afraid of, folks. It has nothing to do with racism. And for President Carter to play the race card, that is extremely, extremely low. He's a former president of the United States. He needs to stop dishonoring this country. He needs to stop dishonoring the very people that he served from 1976 to 1980. And by the way, do a little study on history. Those were not very good years economically for this country. From 1976 to 1980, we reached about 13% unemployment, about 22% inflation. Right? We had home mortgage rates at like 17-18%. We had gas rationing. We had hostages being held in Iran that he couldn't do anything about. Go back and read about the record of President Jimmy Carter. It was awful, which is why Ronald Reagan came in and cleaned his clock in the election of 1980. So former President Carter, shut up. As a matter of fact, a lot of the political analysts believe that the former President Carter is actually hurting Barack Obama by saying stuff like that. He's actually adding to more of the discontent with some of President Obama's policies by saying stupid stuff like that. So, President Carter, you're a tired old man. We can see that. And just, you know, shut up and just enjoy the rest of your life. But knock that crap off. So, former President Carter, that's it. I'm done getting on my soapbox about that. But he definitely gets the Numbskull Award for today's survival show. So, with that being said, let me make a couple of announcements, and then we're going to jump into our self-defense topics. The announcements I want to make, basically two quick ones. And that is, the first one, I say this almost every time, but it's very important. Our forum is growing, and I'm so proud of our forum. We have some very good individuals on there talking about some really cool stuff on how to live a more secure life. So get on the forum. Todayssurvival.com is our website, todayssurvival.com. You can click the forum page. It'll take you where you need to go, and I think you're going to get a lot out of the forum. Don't forget our sponsors. Knives and Gear and Personal Senior Monitoring. I'll put links to their websites. And I just bought a new knife from Knives and Gear, and I'm looking forward to getting it. He's got some very good stuff. So check out Knives and Gear and Personal Senior Monitoring. And spread the word, folks. If you like what you hear on this show, spread the word. Because one of the best ways that we find out about about good topics and good things out there is by other people's recommendations, personal recommendations. So I would appreciate it if you know somebody, and you might want to pick an episode where I got kind of neutral about stuff and didn't have a lot of opinions on something. And a good one on that is probably, I would say, episode 14, I think it was, where it was how to talk to someone new about survivalism. And you might want to listen to that one yourself. Excuse me, don't email that one. Listen to that one yourself to get prepared to talk to somebody new about survivalism. Then you might want to send them episode 11 or even episode 7. You might want to check out those two. Okay, so that's enough for the announcements. Now let's dive right into self-defense without a gun. The first topic I want to talk about is the ultimate weapon. The ultimate weapon in self-defense is your mind. Your brain is the ultimate weapon. It's the best weapon that you can deploy at any given time. And it's the first thing that I'd like you to work on, and that is your avoidance of danger. You know, the best way to solve an attack is just don't get into one. Raise your situational awareness. Raise your ability to be able to sense danger and stay out of it. And when I got to thinking about this, I came up with four common sense questions that I think that you should ask yourself. This is just basic common sense, but you should be thinking about this at all times. Okay? The first common sense question, is it wise for you to go out with somebody who's always getting into fights or always getting into trouble? You know, I mentioned on one of my shows, you're a product of the company you keep. And I'm a big believer in that. Who are you around? And who are you hanging with? And I'm speaking to some young people here for a minute. If I've got some young people listening to this show, which I know I've got a few, is it wise for you to go out with somebody who is always getting in trouble? Stay away from those people. They're going to drag you into it. The second common sense question is if you're out walking at night, for example, and you see a group of undesirable people, what do you do? You know, do you continue to walk towards them or do you take another route? You know, I'd suggest taking another route. I would say trying to be looking ahead of you. Be looking ahead of you quite a ways before you even get, you know, start. It's like when you're driving, you know. When you're driving, you should be looking, you know, several cars ahead of you, not just looking at the car that's in front of you. Same thing when you're just moving about, even if you're walking. The third common sense question, this applies to ladies. Ladies, I want to ask you a question. Would it be advisable for you to get into a car with three guys you've never met, for example, and go out and ride, go take a ride with them and have some fun? You know, I see so much of that stuff. I mean, you know, some of these women that get themselves into trouble sometimes, and I'm not saying, you know, don't take offense to this, ladies, but, you know, sometimes you got to use your head here and not put yourself in a potential danger situation. The fourth common sense question. If you go to the mall, for example, should you park your car in an isolated area or should you park it as close to the entrance as possible? You know, should you park your car next to a huge van or a truck where the visibility is blocked off? Or should you park it next to the entrance underneath a lot of lights and not next to some big truck or van? Think about that stuff. Use a little bit of common sense and forward thinking, you know, when you're out and about, because your avoidance of danger is going to be one of your greatest weapons. And the other thing I want you to develop in your mind is to learn to get good instincts. Learn to develop your instincts and learn to assess threat levels. Now, let's talk about different threat levels. And when I say threat levels, I'm not talking about disasters here. I'm talking about personal attacks, because that's the major subject of this show, is how to fend off personal attacks. In other words, bodily harm. And I'd like you to start using terrorist threat levels like the Homeland Security Department does. You know how they have different levels of terrorism threats? You can adopt some of this for yourself. And here's what I mean. Start with the green threat level. Okay, if you're in an environment and you're at level green, you've got a feeling of security. You know, you're looking at your surroundings. Your surroundings seem pretty safe. You're in kind of a relaxed, carefree state. And, you know, you're using your situational awareness and you're thinking, all right, well, this might be a pretty safe environment. I don't feel like I'm in a lot of danger. Now, let me warn you something about being in the green level. Attackers feel more secure when they can sense, they feel better about trying to attack you when they can sense that you're in the green level. So we're going to talk a little bit later about how not to project that you're comfortable. See, attackers don't want to attack someone that they think is ready to fight back. And believe me, criminals, they have a sense. They can tell whether someone is carrying themselves in such a manner that they may fight back. We're going to talk about that. But you know, when you're in your green level, you're kind of in a state of bliss. Everything seems okay. Then there's threat level blue. And when you're in threat level blue, you're kind of in a calm state of awareness. You're calm, but you're aware of your surroundings. You're scanning your environment for things that look a little bit out of the ordinary. you know, things that don't quite look normal. You're using common sense to be aware and to avoid potential areas of high risk. You know, if you've got people looking in your eyes and they don't just look right, you try to avoid them. You're in a level blue threat level. It's a little bit more uneasy feeling than level green, but you know, but things are still okay. But you're cautious. Now, you might find yourself in threat level yellow. In threat level yellow, you're taking a proactive approach to the situational awareness. Your internal alarm and your external alarm, you're scanning for dangers and threats. You're mentally rehearsing your plans in case you're attacked. You know, if somebody's aggressive to you, again, remember earlier I talked about being unconsciously competent, you have to have a reflex reaction. If you're at yellow, you're now mentally rehearsing, okay, what am I going to do? What am I going to do if this person, you know, it gets out of hand? And you conduct awareness and avoidance scenarios in your mind. And you've also talked to your family and friends and coworkers, if any of them are with you. If you're in threat level yellow and you've got some family, friends, or coworkers with you, you might have had a brief discussion already about, you know, hey, okay, what's going to happen? I think there might be some danger here. You know, what are we going to do about it? You know the danger exists, but it hasn't presented itself yet. And that's the key about level yellow. All right, the danger hasn't presented itself yet, but you're considering and scoping out all weapons that might exist. You're preparing for a perceived threat. Now, hopefully you don't get to these next two levels, but I got to talk about them anyway. If you are at threat level orange, your internal and or your external alarm sees, hears, and feels the presence of a threat. Folks, you can feel threat. I mean, you know, in a little bit I'm going to talk about how to increase your sensory awareness to where you can feel threats. And you're already starting to take action to avoid that threat if you're at orange. You're making any and all adjustments to prepare for danger. You're making any and all adjustments to the plans that you had at that moment. And you're taking action to secure your family and to secure yourself. Your plan of action is already in the works if you're at orange. Okay, hope you never get there. Hope we never. That's the thing that we hope we all never have to do is be at orange and start activating our plans. But it does happen every day somewhere. And of course, the worst is if you're at threat level red. If threat level red occurs, you're already in an actual conflict. You are already wrestling with danger. And you've made it to the place where now you've got to take action. You're fighting, fleeing, or running for cover. And that's about your three options if you're in level red. You're either fighting, you're fleeing, and I would suggest, folks, whenever you can, you know, quit trying to be Rambo. You know, quit trying to be Mr. Tough Guy. If you can get out of the situation, if you can get out of that threat level red, if you can get out of that danger, get out. I'm a big proponent of carrying a gun. And even though that's not what this podcast is supposed to be about, you know, if you've listened to my other shows, you know I'm a big proponent of that. But I don't want to use it, folks. I am going to try to flee and get out of that situation first. And in most states, that's what the law says anyway, in a lot of states, that you have to flee. Now, we don't have those kinds of laws here in Texas, but there's a lot of states in the United States where it says you have to make an attempt to flee or take cover first before you're allowed to use a weapon. And by the way, know the laws, folks, in where you live. Whatever country or state that you live in, know the laws. I'm going to leave that up to you. I can't do research and come up with the laws in every single place that my listeners live in. So this is up to you to know the laws. But if you're at red, you're fighting, fleeing, or taking cover, there's no more decision making. Your mind's clear now. You've got to take action. And you take any and all appropriate actions to sustain your life. And that's whatever weapons you have, if they're the non-firearm or even if they are the firearm. And I would start, what I would do if I were you is I would start by working on developing some of your senses. So let me segue now off of the different threat levels. And let's talk about what you can do to heighten some of the senses that you have, some of the human senses like hearing and seeing and feeling and smelling, to get a better understanding of what might be going on around you. You can use these techniques to increase your situational awareness, and then I'm going to get into some actual weapons. First of all, take a day where all you do is you focus on your hearing. Don't depend on your other senses. You know, listen to things that surround you. You know, what story are these telling you? Listen to people's words. You know, you do have to develop some skepticism. I'm trying to tell you, you know, you have to... I'm not saying take a negative approach all the time to what people are saying, but, you know, just make some notes. Make some mental notes. Take a whole day where all you do is just listen. Okay, we have two ears and one mouth. Use them accordingly. But you'd be amazed what you can hear when you listen, when you just really intently listen to people. Then, number two, take another day and just work on your sight. What are you seeing? Okay, observe people from afar. Look at their routines. You know, look at what's their mood. Try to look at what exactly are they doing? What's the purpose of what they're doing? And make some notes on what you find. Also, take another day where all you work on is just your feelings. Okay, close your eyes and make your way out of a room, and then just stand there outside that room and just try to feel stuff. Feel the temperature change if someone walks into the room or if someone walks up close to you. You know, try this with your spouse. Okay, walk out of the room, close your eyes, and then just tell your spouse, you know, why don't you walk up close to me whenever you feel like it, and then just pause and wait for your spouse to approach you and see if you can feel his or her presence. Okay? Start developing those types of sensory functions, and then also take another day to just work on senses of smell. You know, explore the different environments that you're in and how they smell different. You know, there's an old saying, you can smell danger. You know, that old saying, you can smell danger. It's true. It's true. I'm not quite sure how to describe it. But I've smelled danger, and I got to tell you, you know, your sensory perception of smell can tell you a lot about every situation. I know some of you are laughing right now, right? You're thinking, oh, there's some people I just don't want to smell. That's not what I'm talking about. But learn to develop those sensory perceptions, and I think that you're going to increase your situational awareness quite a bit. So hopefully I've given you some things to think about training your mind, the ultimate weapon. Now let's move into weapons. You know, if you spend any time at all on different internet forums, and I do, you're going to come across a lot of discussions about weapons, and you're going to hear people on forums say things like, well, you know, let's talk about guns for a minute. They're going to say things like, well, it doesn't matter what kind of a gun or ammo or trigger you have. All that matters is that, you know, it's a good shot. And that's true. Shot placement is everything. But again, we're not talking about guns here. But since we are on the subject of weapons, I want to make something very, very clear. Be very sure and be very clear about the fact that you need to use a weapon. And let me explain why. One of our forum members recently introduced me to another podcast that I suggest that you all listen to. It's a podcast put out by an organization called Pro Arms, and I'm going to put a link in the show notes to Pro Arms, and it's called The Bison King. And I'll let you listen to the podcast, and you can figure out why they call it The Bison King. I'll put a link in there. You can go straight to the podcast, and you should listen to it. I'm going to briefly tell you what it's about. It's about the perversion that occurs in our justice system. It's not even about somebody who used a weapon to harm somebody. It's about somebody who was framed big time into a murder that they never committed, and serve some time, and somebody else is still serving time, even though it was proven that the people serving time in prison weren't even there. And I know you hear a lot of stories about this, but this story is particularly disturbing because it's about the twisted justice system, a twisted prosecutor, a twisted sheriff that because of personal gain, they went after some people. And you got to listen to the Bison King. And the reason I bring it up is because I'm about to talk about some weapons, but you better be real sure that it's necessary for you to use these weapons and that you can't flee and get away from the situation first. So that's all I'm going to say about that, but I highly, highly recommend that you take about 47 minutes or so, after you listen to today's survival show, of course, listen to the Bison King. So, weapons. We'll cover this pretty quick here, but there's some good stuff about it. Don't forget, first of all, one of the best non-firearm weapons outside of your mind, and that is a good old baseball bat. You know, there's a whole lot you can do with a baseball bat. Now, we have a forum member. He goes by the username CX, and he's from the UK. And he sent me some pretty good information about a baseball bat made by a company called Cold Steel. It's called the Cold Steel Brooklyn Smasher. Cold Steel is a very famous maker of knives. We're going to talk about some knives here in a little bit. But they make a pretty cool baseball bat. Now, it's not your ordinary baseball bat. It looks like an ordinary baseball bat, but it's actually made out of heavy grain polypropylene. And they can't break. They're injection molded, and you can't, there's not, you can't do anything to them to break them. They won't snap, they won't splinter, you won't have a bunch of wood flying around your face if you have to use a bat to defend yourself and happen to break it. I think on their website they show a pickup truck running over it and it just bends. It doesn't break. And they're very durable. The other thing about them is they'll last a long time. They won't rot. They won't crack. Okay, they don't even fade in color. But it's pretty cool. I like it because, first of all, don't forget the damage you can do with just a good old bat. And again, you know, your mindset. You know, if you're in a fighting mode, folks, I'll tell you what, when someone's trying to attack you, very few things freak them out more than someone ready to fight back and someone who's effective. Most of the thugs out there that want to attack you are wimps. Most of them don't want a return fight, and most of them will flee. So don't forget about the good wallop. My wife keeps a billy club by the bed, and my wife can use that billy club pretty well. I have to be mindful of that sometimes. The second weapon I want to talk about. You remember those things called a personal attack alarm, personal safety alarms? You remember those little black things about the size of a pack of cigarettes, and they had a little rip cord on them, and you yank that rip cord, and it just makes one hell of a lot of noise. It sets off about 103, 105 decibel siren. You remember those personal attack alarms? You know, you can get those for $10. There's another weapon you can use, because what that does is it creates an obnoxious noise. And noise is something criminals don't like. They don't want to be heard or seen. So don't forget about those personal attack alarms. If ladies, it's easy to keep those in your purse. All right? And I think they're great. Just yank that ripcord and it is one ear-piercing, obnoxious siren that starts going off. So don't forget about those. And I'll put a link in the show notes. There's some that are on sale for like $9. They're still effective, folks. Also, let me give you some ideas on how to make your own self-defense weapons. How about just a big, huge wool sock and put a can of beans in it? Sew a can of beans inside of a sock, and then tie some knots in the sock, and kind of use it as a handle. You wallop somebody over the head with that, it's going to hurt. All right, they're much more likely to say, you know, I'm out of here. Forget this person here. It's cheap. It's easy to make. It's effective. You know, how about a nightstick? How about a nightstick or a walking cane? Okay, get a nightstick or a walking cane. I don't care if you don't use a cane, but just, you know, keep one by your bed or keep one in the house. Put some fishing weights in it. You know, put some heavy fishing weights inserted into the end of that stick or cane. That makes a good walloping weapon. Another idea CX put on the forum, I didn't think about this. This is a good one. Get a long flathead screwdriver and sharpen the tip of it. You can turn a screwdriver into a pretty nice dagger. Okay, that makes a good weapon. Just get a long flat-headed screwdriver and just, you know, sharpen up the use a knife sharpener and sharpen up the tip of it. Also, don't forget about big dogs. You don't ever underestimate the power of a big dog in your house. Even if they won't bite, just the perceived threat of a big dog, you know, inside of your home, that's enough to scare some people away. If you go out for a walk, take your big dog with you. Okay, remember, that's the third layer of protection. In one of my other shows, I talked about home defense, and it's still my firm opinion, your primary layer of home protection, your first layer is your home alarm system. There's a lot of statistics to support that. The second layer of protection, your reinforced locks on your doors. And third, if you've got a big dog in the house, I'll tell you what, they can be very intimidating. Also, don't forget those laser lights. This isn't something you can make. I think you have to buy these. But remember those laser lights, those bright little tiny laser lights about the size of a pen? Hey, those things. You know, you shoot that in someone's eye. And anything that you can do to deter people from what they're trying to do to you helps. The other device I want to talk about, a pepper spray gun. There's a brand sold by Defense Devices. I'll put a link in the show notes about that. It's a mace pepper spray gun. Sprays about 25 feet of pepper spray. And, you know, it'll spray a steady stream that'll blast up to 25 feet. In most places, these are legal to carry. This one sold by Defense Devices is pretty cool because it actually looks like a revolver. And it kind of looks like a gun. So if you're used to shooting, but you don't want to be carrying a gun, when you get a grip on this thing, it feels like you're holding a little .38 snub-nosed revolver, but it's a whole lot lighter, and it's pepper spray. And pepper spray can be pretty incapacitating. Since we're on that subject of pepper spray, let's talk about pepper balls. Pepper balls are they're made by a company called Hot Shot, and you can put them in your paintball gun. Now, again, check the laws in your area. But pepper balls are pretty cool because what they do is they shoot they shoot pepper spray out of paintball guns, and it kind of uses a chemical called capsaicin. And I think it'll pump out like about 12 rounds per second or so. And some of these have been proven to go up to a couple of hundred feet. And they'll spray enough pepper spray in about a 60-foot area. So if you've got some people on your property and you want to get rid of them, shoot some pepper balls out of your paintball gun. And again, I'm serious, you know, paintball guns are fun and they're good. They're fun to go have some, you know, bonding time going to a paintball range and playing war. But buy some pepper balls. I'm going to put some links to the their website on the show notes as well. I think, again, check your laws. But that to me, that sounds pretty cool. You know, about 12 rounds a second going a couple of hundred feet. That might get rid of some people off your property. And you also might want to consider a taser gun. This is my favorite. I like taser guns. Again, check the laws. Make sure that you're allowed to carry a taser gun. There's one called a Hot Shot that I really like. I've seen these sold at gun shows, too. The Hot Shot taser gun, it's pretty much the only product that instantly releases a bunch of hot pepper powder. And what's really cool also is that the Hot Shot's a pepper. It's a pepper gun. It's not a taser gun. I'll put a link in there. The taser guns, actually, they shoot out about 50,000 volts over about 15 feet of wire. Now, 50,000 volts, folks, let me tell you what. That is pretty incapacitating. If you hit somebody with 50,000 volts, you're gonna take advantage of what's called NMI, neuromuscular incapacitation. And if you've never seen how a taser gun works, I'm going to put a link in the show notes. There's some YouTube videos of people actually getting shot with a taser gun. There's one called a C2 taser. And I like it because it's real small. You can buy a holster for it. And basically, it can be discharged to work anywhere on someone's body. It doesn't matter where you hit them with it. It's gonna incapacitate them. 50,000 volts, I don't care how much drugs they're on, how much alcohol they're on, this is gonna stop them dead in their tracks. They claim on their website, now this is what I think is interesting. They claim on their website that it has the same stopping power as a 9mm handgun. That's interesting. I didn't know that, but if that's the case, heck, I mean, there's a good, if you don't want to carry a gun, carry the Taser C2. And again, I'm going to put a good link on the show notes. Check out that Taser C2 because it's a pretty effective weapon. I mean, 50,000 volts? Come on. The next weapon, let's not forget about a good knife. Knives are intimidating, and it doesn't matter what this. You know, some people think, well, I got to have a big knife in order for it to be intimidating. No, you don't. A small knife, you'd be amazed what can be done if you know how to use it and how intimidating that you can be. You'd be surprised what can be done with a small blade knife. Now, check the knife laws in your area. In Texas, we're allowed to carry knives with a 5.5-inch blade. This is Texas. What can I say? We're not allowed to carry switchblades and things like that. Most states are not going to allow you to carry that. But there's some real good uses, and knives can be very intimidating. A couple things to remember about a knife. There's three basic applications that you use a knife for in a fight. Stabbing, slashing, or smashing. And the design of the knife determines the effectiveness of it. One of our forum members by the username Word Warrior, he carries a large blade, and it's made by Cold Steel. It's called a Tylite. It's a stabbing knife. I mean, if you look at it, I'll find a link to it, and I'll put a picture of it on the show notes. It's a stabbing knife. It's something that's not really a utility knife. It doesn't have a whole lot of belly to it, but it looks like a humongous dagger, and it is one intimidating fighting tool. And I don't care who's got that thing in their hand. It's going to be very, very intimidating. You know, and that would be an example of stabbing. Then there's a slashing knife. And there's smashing knives. You've got to do some research on it. I could do a whole podcast, and maybe I will, on what the difference is between the different knives. But don't forget about the good old folding knife. The one I just got from Knives and Gear is a SOG Vulcan. And just a good old folding knife. If you practice, just like as you practice drawing a gun, if you practice getting that thing out of your pocket and flipping that thing open, with a lot of practice, you'd be amazed. In less than a second, you can get that thing out and you can be ready to do some battle. Again, you got a thug attacking you. They see you're armed and you're ready to fight back with a knife. You've just increased your chances of running that person off. Some things to remember about steel. If you're buying a knife for utility, you might want to have harder steel, and you might want to have thicker steel that doesn't flex as much. But if you're buying a knife strictly for fighting, it needs to be more pliable. It has to have some flex to it. In a defense situation, you might strike it on another knife. You might strike it on a gun. You might come up against a door jamb. You might drop it on tile or rock or whatever. And very hard and brittle steel might break. But if your knife is flexible, it won't break as easily, and you can get it back into the fight a lot easier. Now, I've heard some argument about whether you should have a fixed blade or a folding blade. Well, again, check your laws. There are some places where you're not allowed to carry a fixed blade knife. Now, fixed blade knives are generally, for those of you who are new to this, they're generally considered better for self-defense. You know, simply because they're easier to deploy, they're easier to get out of a sheath or a holster that you're carrying it into, and as soon as you yank it out of the holster, you're ready. You don't have to open the blade. I'm a big believer in having a folding knife. And again, if you practice, if you've got an assisted opening knife that's spring-loaded, those don't classify as a switchblade, so they're legal to carry most of the time. Sometimes you get a cop that is stupid and doesn't know the laws, or he wants to be a jerk, And you'll get in trouble sometimes if you have an assisted opening. But most of the time, you won't. You can flick those things open pretty quick. And you can get those out of your pocket. And some of them, the kind that I like, have what's called an index finger stud, where all you got to do is pull that out of your pocket and then just flick your index finger right on that little stud, and the blade whips right open. That's what I like. And again, practice, practice, practice. It's a personal preference whether you want to carry fixed blade or whether you want to carry folding blade. I don't see a whole lot of people that carry fixed blade knives, but don't ever underestimate the ability of a folding blade knife to defend yourself. A couple of good brands if you're looking for folding blade knives: Cold Steel, Benchmade, SOG, Spyderco, Kershaw. I'll put some links to all of those in the website. Matter of fact, you'll see them all on knivesandgear.com. And the last weapon that I want to talk about before we wrap things up here is what's called a sap cap. A sap cap is kind of a cool product. It's a high-quality black-colored baseball cap. And it looks like someone is wearing an ordinary baseball cap, but it's got a hidden feature in it. In the back of the baseball cap, what's sewn in to the material on the back of that is a non-toxic weight, usually made out of tungsten. And it's a non-toxic weight, and what's really cool is the idea behind a sap cap is pretty simple. You feel like you're being attacked, you just reach up with one hand, grab the bill of your cap, swing it off your head towards the person attacking you, and just whack them. Whack them with the weight that's in the back of that sap cap. And any number of angles and lines and moves can be incorporated. And there's some good YouTube videos on a sap cap that I'll link. But you basically have kind of a flexible club in your hands, and it's pretty cool. And you can use it to smash, stun, crush them, hit them in the face, hit them in the groin, whatever you want. You can also use what's called a two-handed bill grab method. If you've got two hands available, grab the bill of that hat with two hands and just give them a good old wallop full of deadly force. The weight in that is the key. The weight in the back of it, and it's comfortable to wear. The way that these designers have made it is it doesn't reduce comfort while you're wearing that. It looks like you're just wearing a normal baseball cap, so nobody's going to suspect anything. So also check out the link to the sap cap. I've kind of run out of time. There's a lot of other weapons. I may, in the next show, do some more research on some weapons, and there's a couple of others that I personally have made that I want to share with you. But I wanted to give you some quick ideas on how to protect yourself without using a gun, how to get your mindset right, how to get your situational awareness set right, how to go through the four stages of development in self-defense and even in survivalism so that you can get yourself prepared to defend yourself if danger should arrive, and I mean physical danger. And I wanted to give you an idea of some of the weapons that you can obtain fairly easily that are lawful to obtain. And again, one last disclaimer I'll put on this. You're responsible for checking the local laws in your area. But hopefully you've got some good non-firearm defense techniques out of today's show. So thanks again for listening. This is Bob Main. You've just listened to episode 18 of today's Survival Show, where we help you harness the power of choice to live a more secure life and strengthen your resolve. And we make survival simple, not extreme. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.